Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I mean, South Carolina's going all classy. You guys sell hats that say Cox on it.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
I celebrated week zero by going to see a 77-year-old rock star at an outdoor amphitheater in Columbia, Maryland.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Auburn is the house in the neighborhood that has two cars on cinder blocks in the front yard and a pet giraffe. And everybody's like, what the hell is going on there? And they're like, we don't care. That's who we are, baby.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. The season is here. I'm going to move my end of podcast appeal to the front. Usually like getting right to the action, but if you're just getting back to us because the season's finally here, well, you're just a bunch of fools who missed a lot of good content of the off season.
It's a lot of where chicken sound sandwich war intel.
Yep. Sasquatch sightings. There was a murder. There was a Sasquatch murder, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bigfoot. Yeah, there was a lot going on. You missed it. But please subscribe. Please share us on social media. Please tell your friends about us. We got Ross Dellinger here. We picked him up on the transfer portal, a realignment. Pete Thamel is off to ESPN. You can see a smiling face on there, but we're better than ever and excited for the season. So it's not the same season unless you listen to us all the time. So appreciate you here. Stick with us. Right, Pat?
You bet. Hey, we will have a lot of fun.
We will get to Michigan's starting quarterback derby. A&M, we got Cock Commander going on down at USC, Cluck Norris. We've got Auburn dysfunction, recurring ongoing saga. We got all sorts of stuff, but I want to start with the debacle in Dublin. We've talked a lot about the Cornhuskers and the perilous fate, you would think, of Scott Frost's future there, employment and what happened. But so we won't go too in-depth on what very well could be two bad teams playing a bad game in hindsight. But Nebraska was leading 28-17 on Northwestern. It looked like, hey, here's a shot for Nebraska to win, to cover, to feel good about itself. They're rolling along. Onside kick, about 9 minutes left in the third, and the game was never the same. Northwestern came back and won 31-28 in Ireland. Pat, I will start with you because you seemed greatly offended by the onside kick. Personally offended.
Because he picked the Huskers.
I mean.
Like you.
I'm not sure I've seen a more profound act of self-sabotage in a must-win game, or near must-win at least, than that one by the great Scott Frost. I mean, your career is on the line this season, and this is one of those 50-50 kind of games, really 60-40 you should win kind of games, and you're up 11, and that's when you decide, oh, let's get cute. Let's be aggressive. Let's be creative. Let's catch them off guard. No, let's turn the whole game around and just give it to Northwestern to come back. I was astounded. I mean, Scott Frost has done a lot of stupid things in 4 years at Nebraska and is very fortunate to have his job for a fifth year. And then you start your fifth year by doing that? I mean, that was as foolhardy a decision as I have seen by a guy who's in hot water and, boy, a long, long time. I was amazed by it, and it blew up like so many other things in Scott Frost's tenure, and yet another close loss. As I said last week, 5-20 in one score games. Make it 5-21, buddy.
Incredible. As Pat knows, I celebrated week zero by going to see a 77-year-old rock star at an outdoor amphitheater in Columbia, Maryland. But I did get to watch the first half of the Nebraska game and saw snippets of the second half before seeing Sir Rod Stewart perform, which was great. But it's certainly better than the Huskers' performance in that incredibly confounding call. So I didn't see a lot of explanation of what he said afterward, except that he regrets the call.
Being aggressive. Being aggressive.
Yeah, being aggressive, right.
Yeah.
Yes, aggressively stupid, I think some might say. So I don't get it, and now it just – that felt like a win or be fired game, right? I mean, it just felt that way. Like if you can't beat a Northwestern team that won three games last year, you're probably not going to get to that mark this year that would keep you as coach. But that's just how it feels.
I didn't like the call. I mean, look, you're up two scores on Northwestern. Historically, that's enough. This is not you're not playing against the 0-3 Hurricanes here, okay? Where you're like, they're getting 60. I got to keep going. It's Northwestern. You punt them deep and you make them go a long way really slow. That's their thing. They just aren't a quick strike offense. So I don't get it. I get the aggressiveness. Look, if they had done it, we'd be going, I seized the job. I don't know. Dumb idea. I was more concerned. You look at that defensive line was not good. There was no pass rush. They got gashed. That's recruiting. That's development. That's weight room. That's coaching. Like, you can't just get grounded and worn down at the end of the game by Northwestern. It doesn't bode well. Scott Frost, this was not win or go home. It was close. If he can beat Oklahoma in a couple weeks, he has a chance to survive. But you are now really on the edge. If he loses to Oklahoma big, he may not make it past that.
Yeah, right.
But either way, he's in a world of trouble. The program just there's nothing you saw. Casey Thompson inaccurate. Once Northwestern made some shifts on defense, the passing game changed. I mean, just there was nothing you saw Saturday. It says, okay, this team, they botched it or something. You can see good teams botch it, right? A fumble on a punt or something, like, you know, some crazy play, but that wasn't it. This was just like you're getting gashed at the end. You could not stop Northwestern. Your D line got worn out in this game. And this is not the most physical team you're going to play this year.
The O-line lost the battle of line of scrimmage too, and they're the ones that threw up like 15 times a day during camp. So
yeah,
that obviously didn't work. Something didn't work there.
All that puking for nothing.
Also puking, the stadium's electronic system in Ireland could not accept payment. And why we should stay, perhaps we should say every college football game in Ireland, rather than come up with some other system, the Irish just said, free food and beer. Come get it.
Yeah, how about that? I mean,
free Guinness. Yeah.
That's awesome. And as I did say on Twitter, I said, somehow I don't think we'd see that same customer-friendly response in an American stadium.
If hell no. Hell no.
No.
They'd let the beer spoil before that. The Irish are just wonderful people. Yeah. Free beer. There was some funny stories, like guys immediately word spread around the stadium. There was free beer as would. And people were like running to the stands.
Yeah. Screw the game.
I mean, it's the power. It's the power of the words free beer because, okay, I don't know what the tickets cost. Let's say they're $100 or $50. It doesn't really matter. Let's say it's $100 and the Guinness is $10. You missed like 30 minutes of the action of something you paid $100 to get one free $10. Like the math equation does not work. If you have the money to fly all the way over to Ireland to watch a game, you have the money to buy a proper pint in the Dublin pubs that night. But it's like free beer. Yeah. I don't want to watch anymore.
I saw where they were limiting it to two pints per person, two free pints per person. So I saw a couple people who were reporting on it and who were there at the stadium said that people were getting their 2 points and then circling back and just getting right back in line, drinking the 2 pints. And by the time they were up there, they were gone. They were getting 2 more pints and circling back in the back of the line. They missed the whole game.
Well, see, this is where I think, like, if you are Irish and you're just kind of, you're casual to indifferent football fan, American football fan, like, I'll go check it out because it's here. This is perfect.
Yeah.
You don't really care that much about the game, but you can get free beer. Hell yeah.
Like me going to a soccer game. I was totally free beer. Oh, screw the game. I think I
I watched the first half. Yeah. Yeah. They just were hammering the Guinness. Tremendous work.
The cup snakes, were epic. They were trying to get them up from the lower deck up to the upper deck. I mean, it was ambitious.
Yeah, the Irish game is great. Navy and Notre Dame next year. We need more games in Ireland, I believe. I think we need more games in Ireland. Just terrific. So that was all you got. So speaking of puking 20 times, most Nebraska fans probably were.
Yeah.
I will hold out. Northwestern looked a lot better, but I'm not jumping that gun. We did that with Illinois last year.
Yeah.
When they beat Nebraska. I mean, Illinois also looked good this weekend.
I'll give Northwestern this. Their left tackle, who has been touted as a first-round pick, looked like a first-round pick. Peter Skoronski, I mean, he was fantastic. At the end of the game, when they were going to run the ball, because Pat Fitzgerald went like mega Kirk Ferentz conservative, like, we're not throwing the ball. We are running the ball, period. And Nebraska knew it, and they still mauled him. And that was largely going behind Skoronski at left tackle. The very impressive performance, at least by him and some others on that offensive line. So that was a very good sign for them. And quite a tweet from their offensive line coach afterwards, who after they absolutely punked Nebraska's defensive line, said, our guys only threw up five times the whole camp.
Not Vomit Tally.
Go figure. Vomit Tally did not pan out. Again, this is a coach. It's like he didn't know it was like Scott Frost did not know he was coaching against Pat Fitzgerald.
Right?
Like, you get down 11.
Yeah.
They're not, you want Northwestern throwing the ball.
Absolutely.
Force them to throw the ball. You're up 11. You got two scores. You just gotten a nice turnover. The hindsight on onside kicks is always, you know, it's 20-20. But again, this is not an explosive offense.
No,
this is a conservative coach.
Yeah, you're up 11 on a team that was in the hundreds, in like maybe like 110 or something in pass efficiency last year. And yes, they're improved in that area. So Helinski looks better, but still, they are a play action passing attack. Like, we have to run to set up the pass. We are going to boot. We're going to waggle. We're going to throw to the running backs. We're going to throw to the tight ends. Yeah. You know, it's get them down and kick it deep and make them show they can throw downfield to beat you. And they just completely fail.
Also, Frost just sounds like a coach that's packed it in right during the press conference, throwing his offensive staff completely under the bus. I saw somebody tweeted, and it was probably the best tweet I saw of the weekend. I think they quote tweeted the quote from Scott Frost throwing his offensive staff under the bus. And I forgot who it was, quote tweeted and put, overseas in Ireland, you have to throw whatever out of your vehicle on the opposite side of the road. So he's throwing his offensive staff under the bus on the opposite side of the road in England. But
that's right.
You know, I kind of friendly with some of those people on his staff, and I don't think that was taken lightly. I think everybody, you know, in this day and age, everybody sees that. So I don't know why I do that. Also, Mark Whipple, right, is offensive coordinator, has now been thrown under the bus twice in a few months
by two different coaches.
yes. So not great. Things not going great. I wonder if, you know, an Oklahoma loss would send them to make an immediate move.
Well, also, like, you bag on Mark Whipple. You just hired him.
Yeah. That's your hire, bro.
For like $900 a year, like $875 or something, like a lot of money. You went out and poached Mark Whipple from Pitt. And one game in, you're already bagging on him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was.
Nobody told you to get Mark Whipple.
Yeah.
You did it. I think Casey Thompson was more the problem. But anyway.
That was a coach in panic mode. But so looking at it just quickly here. So, yeah, they probably somewhere, they either need to win every borderline game or they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of their hat to get to 7-8 wins, all right? Going to beat North Dakota and Georgia Southern, are you better? That sets up the Oklahoma game, and that's one of your four rabbit out of the hat possibilities there. And then at the end of the season when it's murderer's row, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, and I don't know whether Frost can make it that far. in between there, in between Oklahoma and that ending stretch, you got Indiana at Rutgers, at Purdue, Illinois, Minnesota. Those are all kind of jump ball games as of now. But as also as of now, and we haven't seen these other teams, I would make Nebraska an underdog in at least two or three of them. So it's going to be tough sledding for Scott Frost, and that Oklahoma game does loom very, very large on September 17th.
Well, here's the thing. If you're smart and you're Nebraska, if Oklahoma is a decisive Sooner victory, you fire Scott Frost then. You have a bye week, and you don't let him go on the run of, right, hey, we beat Indiana, Rutgers. Like, Purdue's going to be tough. But maybe they pull that out in Illinois, and next thing you know, you're like, hey, we got to stick with the guy, and he's going to end up being seven wins, six wins.
Mm-hmm.
You don't risk it. If you want him gone, you fire him if Oklahoma, takes him to the woodshed and just say, because you don't want to risk those easier games. They should beat Indiana and Rutgers every year.
Right. The only complication there is, again, everything comes back to money. The buyout drops on October 1st, which
drops
is
half.
2 weeks after the Oklahoma game.
Right? Fire him in
the
morning.
Drops in half from 15 to 7.5.
Yeah. Dude,
you fire him that
October
morning.
2nd.
The week of the Indiana game, Trev Alberts is out there saying, Coach Whipple, why don't you take a little bigger hand in things here this week, okay?
It's 11:59.
Yeah.
Whatever. Or 12:01.
Scott Frost comes in. Well, Trev, why would you do that? Oh, no reason. Nothing. Just a suggestion.
Scott Frost's phone rings at 12:01 on October 1st. Do not answer. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they got so much money coming, but that is a lot of money. So, well, he might pull the, you want to fire me, fire me after Oklahoma. Anyway, huge game in a couple weeks. We'll discuss it then. All right, week one is coming. We're going to talk about the big matchups more later in the week. A couple interesting stories, though. Let's start with the quarterbacks at Michigan. Jim Harbaugh, I think, he coached in the NFL. He played a long time in the NFL. I think he looked at this schedule and said, we might as well just do this like the NFL and have a preseason.
Yeah.
He's got Cade McNamara, who led them to the big season last year. He's got backup J.J. McCarthy. I think every single person knows J.J. McCarthy has greater upside, but Cade McNamara is really good and won him a lot of games. So Cade McNamara says, we have not figured out who the starting quarterback is. Cade McNamara will start against Colorado State this weekend. J.J. McCarthy will start the following week against Hawaii. Then a starter for the season will be determined for the UConn game, which is game three, and then ostensibly your first any kind of challenge is Maryland week four. So he's basically saying we're going to win these first two no matter what. Let's do this and see where we're at. Now, famously, back in the day, they had the Drew Henson, Tom Brady QB battle where Lloyd Carr started one for one quarter. And then the second quarter, the other guy started. Then at halftime, the coaches decided who should play the rest of the game. That was dreadful.
That was goofy. This is almost as goofy.
Almost. I give this better than that because that was stupid. And you ended up with the wrong guy, by the way, too often. Brady still playing. Still should have gone with
that
Tom.
Happily.
I hate this. I feel pretty definitive. This is the guy to go with. But, thoughts on that. Pat, what do you got?
I said this is getting Spurrier-esque when that came out. This is kind of, like Steve Spurrier would come up with goofy-ass things to do with his quarterbacks. At one point, he was literally shuttling them in and out every play somewhere in the mid-90s. I think Jesse Palmer and Terry Dean or somebody in Terry Dean were part of that. And this to me is like, I think it's indicative of a couple things. First of all, I think they're both good quarterbacks and you can win with both of them. I think Dan, your point is exactly right. The schedule gives them the opportunity to do this and let it play out in a public forum where you're not just, hey, trust me, this is what this guy's been better in practice. Everybody can probably see who's going to be playing better after two games. But you're toying with the quarterbacks to a degree where while it gives them each a chance, how far are you going to take this uncertainty with them? And then is this also a means to make sure nobody jumps in the portal? You know, you're going to give them through September 10th. There might be some schools on quarter systems where you could bail and get enrolled there and get things moving. But for the most part, I think this kind of is going to lock them both in for the season. And I will say, like, if you were, Dan, you were around the team. Some are Ross, I don't know whether you covered Michigan last year. I don't remember. But, like, Cade McNamara is A-plus leader guy. You know, I mean, he's got that sort of vibe about him. And they put McNamara and Aiden Hutchinson out front every, you know, week after week. They were the spokesman for the team, and they handled that very well. So McNamara's been voted a captain. They really like that, but I also heard Harbaugh rave on the intangibles of McCarthy. He was the freshman who, like, they would go play at Wisconsin, and then McCarthy would grab, they'd travel back to Michigan, and he would grab the other freshman skill people and go into the facility and work out after the game, after a road game. So, you know, there's a lot to like about both guys. We'll just see. I don't know whether you can conceivably keep both guys for the long haul.
Yeah, this is just bizarre how he's handling this. And you wonder, you know, how it plays into the psyche of 18, 19, 20-year-olds being on the competition. It's one thing, like, for the competition to be closed off at a practice, a private practice where nobody sees. And now the competition is going to play out publicly, like on national TV in front of everyone. That could spell disaster, I think, mentally. That's why you probably don't see it happening very often in college as opposed to the pros. So this should be interesting. But it seems like a classic, like Pat mentioned, you've got the young, talented kid against the, like, savvy veteran who probably has, like, probably is more Mr. Consistent and is going to give you, you know what he's going to give you, as opposed to, you know, this other guy who is, again, maybe a little more talented and maybe gives you a little more, but at the same time, it's a little riskier, I guess, especially if Cade has the team, which he seems like he does, right? Like, he does have the team behind him. It's tough to dethrone kind of that person, I feel like. And we saw, you know, Jim Harbaugh's kind of handling it the opposite of what Dave Aranda did at Baylor, where after spring, boom, he picked his starter and let the other guy, right, go into the portal. We're seeing the opposite here.
Well, I think that plays into the decision. I don't know. I mean, they're both there. I'm sure it's a very difficult decision. It's not like J.J. McCarthy looked like Trevor Lawrence, but I think, you know, if you're playing in the Georgia game or at Ohio State at the end of the year, you need as much talent on the field as possible, and J.J. McCarthy just has a higher upside. But Michigan won its national title with Brian Griese. Georgia won its title with Stetson Bennett. So, you know, you see this in college all the time. I do think there's some portal guarding. I mean, look, J.J. McCarthy's 5-star recruit on 24/7, high 4-star. Had he wanted to transfer, maybe even right now, but let alone earlier in camp or last spring, with NIL, I mean, someone's, you know, take like Auburn. We're going to talk about Auburn a little bit. Maybe they don't want to because they're undermining their coaches and stuff. But how much does Auburn give for J.J. McCarthy right now when you're sitting there going, I need a quarterback?
Hell yeah.
You know, absolutely. So you can sit there and go, we'll give you a starting job and $1 million. You know, this is what you're dealing with. And so this way, you know, does McCarthy become the starter? Does he not? Do you get far enough down where he just sixed it out because he's going to be the starter next year? I mean, McNamara, I think, would still have eligibility, but he's already a grad student. I don't know how that would play out. Who knows? But this is where we're at. It'll certainly be an interesting thing. I do like this better than – I like two things about this. One is the straight acknowledgement. Now, it may blow up on him, but probably not, that this is preseason. Our schedule absolutely stinks.
Right.
And so we're going to do 2 weeks, and then we're still going to have a warm-up game before Maryland. Okay, so there's no urgency to make a decision at Michigan, and I give Harbaugh credit for going with that and saying, hey, what the hell? We can't beat these two teams with these two quarterbacks. It doesn't matter. And then, B, you find out what happens when you do throw a pick. How does a guy respond? And when right. You're trying to juggle two and you're always one mistake away from getting benched, it's a hard way to play. So I think that'll be.
Yeah. Now, from that standpoint, you're at least giving each guy a legitimate chance. You're not, don't have them looking over their shoulder or wondering, okay, is next series my last series? Theoretically, unless, I mean, if you come out and stink it up and you're losing, then that could change things. But
I'm interested in the era of the transfer portal. It's really, really interesting to see how coaches are handling these recruiting battles. Like I mentioned, Aranda, and now we talk about Harbaugh, Aranda, like getting it done after spring practice. And obviously every quarterback battle is different and has its own elements. But you see what Aranda did in places like, you know, Michigan, what they're doing. And then my mind goes to LSU and what happened there. You know, had they rectified their quarterback battle in the spring, Miles Brennan might be quarterback in Nebraska right now. I mean, it's crazy how these things kind of have unfolded. And it's a good storyline to watch going forward. Every August, every summer, spring, whatever, when you have a starting quarterback battle coming in, how is the coach handling it as it relates to the transfer portal? Because, you know, whoever loses that battle is especially they're of a more experienced player, how marketable they are in the transfer portal. It's kind of a fascinating new dynamic we're seeing arise with the whole portal and immediate eligibility.
Teams are so desperate. You could get a salary bump.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, so we'll go to A&M. Haynes King is announced the starter this week against Sam Houston. Now he's a sophomore. He played two games last year, injured his leg. Max Johnson, the LSU transfer, he beats him out for the job. And Connor Wegman, who's top 25 recruit, five-star recruit out of in-state Cypress, Texas. So kind of same thing there. You got three guys, and, you know, Wegman's probably fine with it for now. But, you know, how do you juggle all that? And I don't know. What King looked pretty good last year. It's just early. But they've got to get ramped up. They've got two games. Sam Houston's State and App State, and then A&M's got to be ready. It's Miami, Arkansas, Miss State, Alabama, away we go. So I thought that was a pretty interesting decision there. But these are all moves you got to make, and you got to know guys can leave at any moment. I mean, I wonder, like, how late in a year would somebody, you know, let's say they'd gone with Johnson, how late in a year would a coach say, I'll take Haynes King?
Right. I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, it would be, it's really, I think would be really hard to bring in somebody after preseason camp and try to shove them in there. But desperate times, desperate things. You know, people would do that sort of thing if they felt like, you know, they could and it could work out quickly. But it's a lot to ask. So chances are you've got whoever your quarterbacks are on your roster now are going to stay on your roster through the season, but we'll still see some stuff happen. And yeah, interesting thought on Haynes King. You know, when he went down against Colorado, they nearly lost that game, and Zach Calzada eventually, you know, moved in, and he was okay. He was, you know, he got him through the season, but he wasn't great. And I think the feeling last year was if they had Haynes King, they wouldn't have gone 8-4. Now we'll see what happens this year, but Max Johnson certainly didn't transfer there thinking he wasn't going to win the job.
Yeah, I know. Another fascinating thing that we're seeing arise too is quarterbacks transferring from one Power Five school, starting quarterbacks at one Power Five school, or at least have started a few games from one Power Five school, going to another with the intention of being the starter there and it not happening. We, you know, Max Johnson, who Brad Johnson's son. You know, it was the kind of the infamous, I guess, game, the shoe game at Florida, LSU, Florida. He was the one that led LSU to that big victory at the end of the regular season of 2020 when LSU went in there and won in the fog and the swamp on the field goal and thrown shoe and all that. I mean, I remember talking to Brad Johnson the next day. I covered that game. I was in Gainesville and talking to Brad Johnson the next day. And there, you know, there was obviously excitement over Max's future, and he was a true freshman then, I'm pretty sure, and looked pretty good at times. And then now he's at his second school and is going to be a backup. So that's a fascinating dynamic when you see these transfer quarterbacks. They don't always get the starting job at their, you know, the grass isn't always greener, so to speak. I don't know what Max Johnson's situation would have been at LSU had he stayed, and now you maybe kind of wonder about that.
Yeah, you know, boy, the buyer's remorse and the 2020 hindsight on some of these switches, and especially intriguing the ones like within conference, like we've been looking at with in the SEC West, where everything seems to be interrelated.
All right, Auburn fires athletic director Alan Green, who hired Brian Harsin. To me, this is it's basically the season's over. Sorry, Tigers, War Eagle. They couldn't fire Harsin last year, so now they fire Green. They're going to fire Harsin, barring unexpected great success. I wish Auburn well. This is Auburn being Auburn. Alan Green was not going to get renewed. He'd been looking for another job anyway. But to me, you fire him now, you get an AD, and then you fire Harsin, and you have the set. You have the search set up. Some classic and kind of rare school. Rival school bashing. Alan Green played at Notre Dame, and then he worked with, Danny White, the Tennessee athletic director, both at Ole Miss and then at Buffalo before getting to Auburn. Anyway, Kevin White, the Duke, former Duke and Notre Dame AD, he's retired now. Quote, "The apparent political dysfunction in Auburn is truly legendary. More specifically, this particular leadership transition unequivocally ascends Auburn to the, quote, catbird seat in terms of being tone deaf nationally." And then Danny White comes in on the tag team, the father-son tag team. Now he's the sitting AD at Tennessee. "Congratulations, Alan Green at A Green 4, for getting the heck out of a crazy situation for greener passions. I admire how you have managed that chaos with class and integrity. Looking forward to seeing your next chapter."
I mean, think about this. First of all, have you ever heard Kevin White say anything controversial in his life?
Like, nah, he's free from a job now. He's like, yeah, that guy never said anything. From the hip. Kevin White's great, yeah. But
no. Kevin White was the most circumspect guy you ever talked to in college athletics. Very careful about what he said, guarded, you know, diplomatic. And now, yeah, he's retired and he's letting it fly here. But I mean, whoa. And then, yeah, Danny White, this is now the second team he's taken a shot at in the SEC in the month of August. I mean, he took a shot at Kentucky over the Stoops Calipari squabble too. So both those things were like, wow. And the whole thing, like,
love it.
Yeah, no. Auburn is just, they are that, they're, I'm trying to, like, the house in the neighborhood that has, like, two cars on cinder blocks in the front yard and a pet giraffe. And everybody's like, what the hell is going on there? And they're like, we don't care. That's who we are, baby.
A literal circus.
That's fine. You don't like our giraffe? You don't like our cars on cinder blocks? That's okay. We do.
For 40 years, right, yeah, it's been that way down there. It's just like, it actually amazes me. It's quite impressive how every 5 to 7 years they field a championship-worthy football program. I mean, they played on a national title. They've gone undefeated like the last, you know, 15 years or so. And despite like all of they've done it despite all of the behind the scenes off the field circus there, where the administration from time to time has no power at all and is in the kind of the big boosters and the power brokers there kind of run the gears of the university. It is it's been that way for forever in or for all my lifetime, and it just amazes me how from time to time they actually field an impressive football team. So you got to think, like, if they didn't have all the off the field drama, how consistently good could Auburn be?
Yeah. I mean, that's the amazing thing. It's like, in spite of the dysfunction, they have had some unbelievable teams.
They remind me of like a West Texas, the West Texas oil businessman. And like the barrel goes to 100 and he commissions like a 28,000 square foot house and buys 3 Rolls Royces and all of that. And all of a sudden OPEC cranks it up and he's got to sell it all. It's boom or bust. Yeah. And you're like, didn't you save a little? Do you ever think of like, you know, I bought like 16 spec wells. Oh no, none of them hit. Just total disaster. He's on like his third wife. Can't get any. But then, you know, the fourth wife could be absolute Miss America, and we're back. There we go, baby. Private jet into Vegas.
That's right.
Making Odessa turn into South Beach. You know, it's just a disaster. This year particularly, you know, Brian Harsin did a really good job coaching Boise State.
Yeah.
And we've been critical a little of his coaching last year, particularly in the Iron Bowl. But he's a good coach. If you hire Brian Harsin to come to the SEC, you have to give them a little bit of time to recruit better. The same way you have to do with Brian Kelly. The same way with anyone. Like, there's going to be a little bit of a curve. You can't just walk into the South and boom, I'm going to get everybody. But you can't undermine them. And they just completely undermine the guy. And this is the last year you want to do this, to Ross's point. The top 100 players nationally in the 24/7 composite rankings, 11 of them are from Alabama. not Texas, not California, not Florida, Alabama. This is the greatest bumper crop of local recruits ever. And Auburn's going to get none of them, maybe. 0-11. You're not going to beat Alabama for all 11, but you need to get 3 or 4. These are top 100 kids nationally, all in your state. And they're going to, a bunch of them going to Alabama, sure. I think 5 of them, Georgia's getting a couple, Florida State, Clemson, everyone's running in. They may not get any of these guys. This is the year you want consistency and you let them build up. Now, if he can't recruit to that level, you should probably fire him because it's not going to work. But I think they pulled the rug out. We have no idea if he could recruit nationally to that level.
Yeah, so, I mean, they kneecapped him last November, basically, you know? I mean, he's playing out the string and hoping for a miracle. And boy, oh boy, I mean, talk about a quarterback situation that doesn't look promising. And I was like, TJ Finley was the guy at the end of last year. They brought in Zach Calzada from Texas A&M. The word out of spring practice was, well, Calzada's better. Oh, and then Finley gets in trouble. But now it's like, ooh, Calzada actually not having a good August. We're going to have to go with Finley. They named Finley. They are coming into the season an absolute hot mess. Not for the first time at Auburn. Not for the last time, but man, oh man, they are making things difficult for themselves. And this is a year, if you did have your stuff together, they open with 5 home games. You know, you've got a chance to really make some hay. And instead, they're coming in with both engines smoking.
I think everything that has happened at Auburn over the last, I don't know, 10 months or so, 8 months, is probably evidence or proof of what we kind of always heard about what happened with the coaching search, is that a certain segment of Auburn wanted one person or a couple different people. And then, you know, Alan Green, you know, wanted this group of people. And I think in the end, if you talk to people there, Alan Green actually got his way and got his coach that he wanted to hire, Brian Harsin. And there was this group over here that often mingle and get into Auburn issues that don't work for the university, probably. That wanted other coaches. And I think the investigation into Brian Harsin back in February or so was that group of people probably, you know, trying to push out a hire that they didn't want in the first place. And that failed. And they've obviously succeeded, you know, in pushing out the athletic director who made the hire. So it's pretty clear what's going to happen here, barring some kind of crazy win streak, you know, barring like a 9-plus win campaign that they have this year. It's pretty obvious where this is going to end. And it's those group of people probably who are going to be pretty significant in naming the next athletic director, firing the current football coach and owing him, I don't know, I think his buyout's like in $12-15 million. Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's an ungodly amount of money.
$15 million.
Incredible. Just incredible.
Well, I think Brian Harsin's going to take his $15 million and go back to the Mountain West somewhere. Right.
Nebraska might
be like,
coach.
I'm good. This is great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, just.
Did you guys see the ticker, was it ESPN ticker this past weekend that said, it had a picture of Brian Harsin, and it had something about what did Brian Harsin's fate as the Nebraska coach? I think Brian Harsin himself yesterday tweeted it, quote tweeted it or something with like a thinking emoji. Yeah.
He's like, I'm coming.
Get me out of here. Get
we can work this out. I'm going to be a very. Well, I'm going to show up with $15 million down payment on a house in Lincoln. It'll go pretty well. Yeah, unbelievable situation. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, that was my. I think you know, and I think we all kind of have put these pieces together. But my strong suspicion is that Gus Malzahn's departure was not necessarily Alan Green's decision. And he got railroaded on that, like many people have in the Auburn administration, like they nearly were with Tommy Tuberville back in the day in 2003. But then I think when it was time to – and they tried to insert Kevin Steele off the staff, who was good old Auburn guy. And then I think Alan Green put his foot down and said, no, I'm the AD here. This is my job. I need administrative backing. Let me do my job. And the administration backed him to hire Harsin. But yeah, the boosters have ever since then been looking for the chance to get rid of both of them.
Yeah. This may be your administration, but it's our school.
Right. Yeah. That seems to be the standing there. And I'll say this, this feels like a long time coming. What's happening with Alan and maybe what's going to happen with Brian I guess it's roughly 2 years ago now. So it was Auburn's search for Harsin after Gus was fired. And I'd heard this story from one of the candidates that Auburn interviewed for that job, which they interviewed like six to eight people, I believe. They interviewed quite a few. They interviewed, I know, Venables then at Clemson as the DC, and they interviewed Billy Napier, who was at UL at the time. And obviously they interviewed Harsin. There were like three or four more, I think they interviewed. But I heard that one candidate was talking to the chairman of the board of trustees, which notoriously Auburn's board of trustees are a bunch of boosters who involve themselves. And the candidate was talking to the board of chairman, and this candidate was pretty serious about taking the job. And he said, hey, you know, I just talked to Alan Green, you know, the coach said to the chairman, and he seems great. And, you know, everything seems wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And the chairman said, yeah, I don't know if Alan's going to be here too much longer. And the coaching candidate, that was it. It was over. The coaching candidate pulled his name out of the job. I think, you know, he saw where it was going. And lo and behold, here we are.
It's an ATM. It's an ATM. And maybe it lasts, but I don't know. But they blew this year's recruiting class. And they obviously have to recruit really, really well at Auburn to win. But this was kind of their chance. I also, you know, these boosters, you know, I feel for the players and their families that go there. You know, the Auburn family, and we're brotherhood, and we're all here for you.
Auburn men.
And these guys are literally just saying, yeah, this season's done. We're going to absolutely, you don't matter. Your senior year doesn't matter. Your junior, like, that's not the way to treat these people. This is the family. Good God. I mean, it's like a lot of families. I'll say that.
But like dysfunctional.
What you're doing is absolutely screwing over players who aren't getting a $30 million, $15 million buyout and aren't getting a bunch of guys to say you'll get another job like Alan Green will, and are just kids on the team that were looking forward to their senior season and now have to play under utter dysfunction because you guys just couldn't be patient and say, let's give Brian 2 years. And if it's not working, we'll start talking about removing people in November. So bad for the players there.
Yeah.
All right. Other controversies in the SEC, and this is really a doozy.
This is a wheelhouse topic for us.
Wheelhouse. We've discussed it before the South Carolina mascot, Sir Big Spur, is actually belonged to just a family that were South Carolina fans. They brought it to a baseball game once, put him up on the dugout, and everyone got really exciting. Mary Snelling and Ron Albertelli. As you would if a Gamecock is all of a sudden, you know, fighting mad. And famously they trimmed off the, what do they call it? The comb. The red comb, part on the top of the head so that it looked like an authentic, real real fighting gamecock. Yeah, yeah, a rooster that would fight. You do that because you want to, in the barbaric tradition of cockfighting, you want the comb off because it's easy to bleed. But the comb actually is a cooling device for the animal, so they suffer, particularly in those, you know, warm climates of Columbia, South Carolina. But Mary and Ron did not care about that. So the new bird owners of the Gamecock is Beth and Van Clark, and they are a little more humane to their animal, which has really angered Mary and Ron because they're going to keep the comb. And so this is not an authentic-looking bird you would send to a real cockfight. Now, I don't know how many people out there, and I hope it's very low, would have known the difference to an authentic cockfighting bird and a rooster. I feel like there's certain things you want to be really authentic to, and there's others you probably don't want to let people know that you know that much detail about. That bird will lose a cockfight in my backyard.
Okay, that's right.
Quiet.
When the boys come over and we put $200 down on the cockfighting ring, yeah.
How the hell did they not sign Michael Vick back in the day? I don't know, but. Anyway, we need a new name because Mary and Ron are chapped about this comb thing, and they're not letting South Carolina use the name Sir Big Spur. Again, the backdrop of these stories is the hard part here.
So preposterous.
This is a real story. This is true. Not even the Daily Mail. So we need a new name, as we discussed this before. And then a terrific story came out, I think, in the Post and Courier, about the names being considered. And
actually, it was the Columbia State.
It was the state. I'm sorry. I have the poll here. My bad. The Columbia State. It's a newspaper war on Sir Big Spur news. And the winner of the poll was Cock Commander. Of course it was.
Of course.
It was overwhelmingly defeated Cluck Norris, who we'll get to. Yeah. And Marco Polo. Now, we later find out the term cock commander, which is just an absolutely phenomenal name, by the way.
The story is even better than the name, which is incredible.
Yeah, just right.
But the story is unbelievable.
It should be the name. I feel like they're not going to be able to name it something else. No one is going to call it anything but Cock Commander.
That's right.
Nor
That's
should
right.
they.
That's right.
Nor should
they. That's right.
Cock Commander.
Student newspaper stories are the best.
Yes. It originated in a long, back in like, what was it, the 90s? They were printing the student newspaper. And as student newspapers do, they put like a gag cut line under a story that they thought someone would later change to the actual cut line. The cut line being whatever describes the picture when they used to have things called actual printed newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah.
And many student newspapers have done this because
You
put people forget to change the thing. Ha ha. And you never know. And all of a sudden, boom, there it is. It's the original, like my phone was hacked on a bad tweet, but you can't, what the newspaper was, someone wrote that thing. So they put the word cock commander in to describe it back in the day. And now the term is back. They should copyright. Whoever wrote that should copyright it right now and start selling knockoff cock commander T-shirts.
Absolutely.
Apparently, though, the state is reporting the likelihood of cock commander becoming officially the name is very low.
Sadly.
I mean, South Carolina is going all classy. You guys sell hats that say cocks on it.
lots of them
just says cocks. You walk around as a guy with a hat which says cocks on his head. Don't tell me you aren't in on the joke.
Well, and again, yeah, the whole premise of the mascot is we are going to have a cockfighting rooster mascot.
Yeah.
This is not like some highfalutin ideal here.
Yeah, first off, cockfighting, I believe, is illegal in all states, but I haven't checked in on Arkansas yet. Maybe still there. Your last owners of the mascot like barbarically trimmed off this guy's comb so all cockfighting aficionados would be like, yeah, that's a real cockfighting bird right there. Your team generally sucks. And you sell a bunch of tats that say cocks on it. Now you're going to be like, oh, no, we can't name it Cock Commander. That's a little racy for us. Come on, man.
The exact cut line under the student newspaper photo that ran and wasn't supposed to run, the cut line said, I am the Cock Commander. All other cocks must bow before the Cock Commander. Yo soy el Cock Commander. Just incredible. Can't make it up. Can't make it up. Unbelievable. I mean, you know, just. Yeah. So that ran in the 2004 edition of the South Carolina student newspaper, then known as The Gamecock.
There you go. There you go. The game.
I'll buy a t-shirt that says Yo Soy El Cock Commander.
Me too.
With a picture of the bird.
I'm in.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The paper's editor at the time noticed the caption and attempted to resend the front page to the printers, but alas, it was too late.
Too late, yeah. That's what happens. Careful of that. Journalism students. Although yeah. 20 years later, everyone's excited about it.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Heroes.
Okay. So I don't know how you can't go. It should be Cock Commander, right, Pat?
Well, it's got to be. It absolutely has to be. And like you said, if it's not, they won't officially name it that, then you're just going to, everybody's going to have to refer to the bird by that name. You know, if you're so insistent on having the actual bird, that's fine. Although I do have to say that was the my favorite part of your brief rant there, Wetzel, was throwing in your team generally sucks.
It's not like you got that much going for you. Shade Beamer is doing an excellent job, I believe. It's really recruiting like well, including in-state. Yep. I think there's a lot of potential there. But historically, I mean, you had ball coach for a couple of years. But generally, no. You need something.
Yeah.
And Cock Commander is your thing. It happened organically. You cannot stop the will of the fans. They have more loyal fans than they deserve.
They do. They have very good football fans given return on investment.
They have a great opening. They have great environment down there. It's a great place to go to a game. All good. But Cock Commander's got to be it. And I leave that with the one caveat. We here at the College Football Inquirer are huge Kluck Norris fans.
Well, yeah.
Because there is an actual Kluck Norris out there.
This would be Kluck Norris 2?
If they're going to do it right, you import the real deal.
The real Kluck Norris
bring in the real Kluck.
Was discovered last spring. We covered this story. If you missed the off season, this is what you're missing. See? You would have been well ahead. Tomorrow's news today, baby. Kluck Norris was an angry rooster that their owner could not control on the farm. So they sent it to an animal shelter in the Charlotte area, just up the road there from Columbia.
That's right.
And he was known for fighting dogs inside the animal shelter. Kluck Norris would take no crap from anybody. A rooster fighting dogs to the point.
Such as Georgia Bulldogs.
Even in a rural North Carolina animal shelter, the workers were like, this is a badass rooster. And they named him Kluck Norris. And there was a story in the paper. And finally, somebody came and took Kluck Norris. And he's supposedly in a better place now. I don't know if that means
chicken
he's alive
pot.
Or not. But he's supposedly, yeah. No, he's alive. He's been housed somewhere else. You go find Kluck and you bring him to his spot. And you say, this is Kluck Norris, that legend. He fought dogs. Who's one of your arch rivals? Georgia Bulldogs.
Exactly.
Wasn't it Bevo who attacked? Was it Bevo who attacked the Georgia? Was it the Georgia Bulldog?
Yeah, attacked Dugga.
Yeah,
yeah. Dugga. Attacked Dugga at the.
Could you imagine
Sugar Bowl or
Kluck Norris?
Kluck.
Poor
Kluck's Dugga. Backing down from Bevo.
Attacking.
No.
I was just thinking attacking the Georgia Bulldog, but the Kluck Norris attacking Bevo would be something.
He'd do that too. Look, that's the thing. They had a chance to get a real rooster who exists, who has already established his street cred to be your tough guy mascot. I mean, he's right out there. Go get him.
I think in the pecking order of live SEC mascots, right, we got to go. You take Mike the Tiger or Bevo? I think Mike the Tiger takes Bevo down.
Yeah, Mike the Tiger.
Yeah.
Mike the Tiger kills, like, everything.
Right? Yeah, I mean, the one is Ralphie. Ralphie would be interesting. You know,
Ralphie would be tough. That's not SEC, but no, you never know way the expansion goes.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed that. Yeah, I missed that part. But yeah, you're right. I think I probably Mike the Tiger. And Auburn doesn't have a live tiger, right?
No.
They got the eagle.
At the War Eagle, that's right.
And eagles are badasses now.
Now, Tennessee has Smokey, but I was thinking of the mascot as an actual mountain man with a musket. I mean, because a musket can take out a tiger.
Well, the West Virginia Mountaineer can shoot everybody.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Now, if Alabama made the elephant real,
that'd be a problem. That'd be a problem.
They talk about the lion as the king of the jungle, but you can watch YouTube. There's like five lions trying to attack an elephant. They just shake them off. Yeah. You know.
So this is what Wetzel does, by the way, when he's not podcasting. Yeah.
I see that.
YouTube African animal fights.
I mean, somebody took the time to put it up on YouTube. It's at least my least I can do. So as far as I'm concerned, Cock Commander is it. Unless you go get the real Cluck Norris. And I don't want to hear about Marco Polo, cute name. I don't want to hear Cock-a-doodle Dude.
I don't want to hear
about the Kickin' Chicken, Coop,
Coop,
the Brewster, Captain Cluck.
Yeah.
No, there's two choices. Let's go. Let's get Cluck Norris a job.
Absolutely. I want Cluck Norris on the sideline strutting around, and I still want a Cock Commander t-shirt. I want both those things.
There's a business there. Start making Cock Commander t-shirts and hats because they can't stop you. They cannot stop you. All right. Finally, and last of our animal stories this week, this is the most sent to a story, as we often will do. Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, downtown Philadelphia, Love Park, which has a nice like splash pad and stuff. Someone showed up with their emotional support alligator. Wally the alligator.
Listen, it was on a Pennsylvania leash. Not in Florida, right? Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Now, I think he lives in York, Pennsylvania, but he showed up in Philly. They took a Wally and his owner, Joey Henney, took a little road trip to Philly. He has him on a leash. Although, what is that? I would think an alligator could just yank that leash out of your hands.
How big is the alligator? Do we have?
There's video.
Measurements?
It looked a little. I mean,
on this sucker?
Like an adolescent, you know, like not huge. Of course, it will get huge.
Not enormous. Not enormous. But anyway, Joey Henney said, I went through a real hard depression and he brought me out of it. My doctor wanted to give me anti-depression medicine. I refused to take it. So he instead chose to spend time with the gator. And Wally is a federally registered as an emotional support animal. And Henny claims that alligators are easier to train than dogs. This is all according to the New York Post.
Like, now, how affectionate is a reptile? Do we have, like, you know, I mean, this just doesn't seem like your emotional support and alligator just don't seem to go together terribly well.
No, cute and
like
cuddly.
Demonstrably cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Cold-blooded, yeah. Right? I mean, these are
literally cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, what do you do with that with the alligator in the winter? I mean, I guess he just roams around the house.
You're not putting that thing
outside in the yard.
What do you do with the alligator in about, you know, 18 to 24 months when it's about 7 feet long? I mean, and don't bring it near water, right? Because alligators are notorious for grabbing whatever they'd like to eat and then diving into the water and rolling with it and killing it. So, this does not seem like a smart thing to do.
Especially a children's splash pad in downtown Philly.
I would advise against that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Picking the fattest, slowest child at the splash pad and going and getting it. Yeah. I mean, I we have to defer to Ross. This is yet another reason the education level of the pod increases, because Ross knows his alligator stuff. He's from the Gulf Coast.
One of my favorite things in the world to eat is blackened alligator. So maybe we could, when Wally gets big enough and you're ready to give it up, pack it in. I can give you my address in D.C. and we'll fry it up or put some blackened seasoning on it and put it in the oven. It's the tail.
Guys,
it's
going to go from emotional support to dinner.
Yes.
Then we'll pop some anti-depression meds.
Yeah, you send me the gator, I'll send you back some antidepressants. How about that? Fair trade.
All right. That's our show. This is the time of year. It's hard to fit it all in. But games are coming Thursday. We'll be out with a podcast before then. But some really good games on Thursday. Backyard Brawl, obviously West Virginia Pitt. Central Michigan returning to Oklahoma State, where they sprung an upset a few years back.
Penn State, Purdue,
the Joe Buck game. If you do not know, Fox traded announcer Joe Buck to ABC and was able to select one extra Big Ten game to broadcast. And they chose Penn State at Purdue Thursday. So this is the Joe Buck game. And then we got the full slate. So we got a lot to discuss next episode. Should be out Wednesday night. But appreciate you here. Continue to subscribe, and we will talk to you later.